Hey, you found us. It's the Ben and Matt Sportscast. I'm Ben Glicks with my tag team partner, Matt Story. And you might be listening to us on Apple Podcasts. You might be listening to us on Spotify. You might be listening to us on Amazon Music. You may have asked Alexa to play this podcast and had it work, because I found out that happened yesterday.
How about that?
But odds are you're not listening at all. But we're going to talk anyway. So, Matt, there's a lot going on. We've been off for a bit. And we missed ASU basketball announcing the signing of, and I'm going to get this last name wrong, I think, Jaden Quaintance?
I don't know. I've not heard a pronunciation, so if you're wrong or right, I'm not sure. I've read about him, though, a little bit. And, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that and a couple of transfers that we've beaten out, I think, from, you know, other big time schools. We're not beating out, Sam Houston State or something like that. Like, you know, we're beating power conference schools. So it's been interesting. I mean, I guess we got to talk some football too. It's some, because recruiting doesn't directly translate into wins, because of all the other things, but certainly it's a piece. And that was big news this week that, kid who was committed to Kentucky, with Calipari and chose not to follow him to Arkansas like some of the others, I texted you when he had a visit here, and I'm like, yeah, I think I even said, I don't actually think that anything will come of this, but I'm excited by just the possibility. And then he commits. So, wow. I don't know what to say except that
he committed. He signed his NIL. He signed all the things. It's, according to 24/7, he is the number 8 national recruit.
He's got
2 years that he has to play in college. He's 2 years away from NBA eligibility.
He's not draft eligible until 2026. So that's intriguing. Now, I mean, we can't have that discussion without the obvious, like, that doesn't mean he'll be here 2 years. If things go well or go poorly or somewhere in between, he'd have the option to transfer. So I don't want to get too excited, but it's exciting to get a player that is that highly regarded. We haven't gotten very many over the 20 or so years of recruiting rankings, online recruiting rankings. Like, the list is pretty short. Harden, Josh Christopher. Kiala King, probably the ones that I could think of.
Yeah. And, batting a solid 333
with those three, admittedly, one great player, Pac-12 player, Pac-10 player of the year, top 5 pick, another that was solid for the year he was here, went in the first round, and then another that was really very much a disappointment.
I think the most intriguing piece of this to me is that this is a rabbit out of the hat type moment. So where is the money coming from? Because clearly the money was right.
It's got to be.
So,
yeah, I mean.
So how did Bobby do it? And relatedly, can baseball and football do it?
And I don't know. Yeah, I mean, did you see the thing? And I don't think anything's final, but I think Jeff Goodman reported it about Hurley, about potentially doing like a series with, I think, Amazon or something like that, like kind of an inside series, and leveraging his own brand, basically his own name to make money. And I don't know if there's more, maybe more substantive to that than just an idea. But yeah, it's got to be. I mean, I joked with you. This feels like, it feels like blue chips, where all of a sudden, he's recruiting at a level that, like, whoa, what is? But of course, now it's all out in the open. You don't have to go to a booster behind the scenes and elicit illegal contributions. Like, it's all there. It's coming from somewhere, and yeah, if it's coming based on the Hurley name, then the answer to your question is probably no. That can't be duplicated for baseball and football because the coaches there don't carry the name that Bobby Hurley still does.
Yeah. I mean, Blomqvist played professionally. He was, you know,
he's a journeyman
on Team USA for a period, but this you know, this is Bobby Hurley, and obviously Kenny stopped playing in high school.
He's a former college superstar, and he's in the news because of his brother. Now he's not just a former college star from 30 years ago. He's, you know, he's a former college star for Duke, kind of one of the pioneers of the Duke, you know, dynasty. And then, having his brother be the head coach of the 2-time defending national champs, putting him in the news, there's a story to be told there. So, maybe that is how it's done. I know I texted you this. It does feel like, you know, having his brother win a championship in his backyard was like maybe the kick in the butt that he needed to, like, you know, we got to do something, man. I can't be going, you know, 17-14 every year while my brother's winning back-to-back national titles. What can we do?
Yeah.
Pull out all the stops.
And,
so,
and look, I'm glad he's doing it here. If this is a recipe for success, I don't think he'll stay here.
No, probably not. Probably not. I mean, we'd be back in that position that we thought we'd, you know,
be in 8 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been an interesting tenure for him, and whenever it's done, it's probably a conversation that, you know, and I say it's whenever it's done because, like, who knows where it goes, you know. It's so far, and I think we talked about this a little, it very strongly mirrors the tenure that Herb Sendek had.
Yeah.
Not 100%, but awfully close. Like, started with promise, got through the initial struggles, really, you know, like, looked like something was building good in years, you know, 3, 4, 5, and just couldn't keep it going. And that, of course, that raises the question of, like, okay, is it the coach or is it the place? And I think it's probably the place. But, you know, maybe Bobby Hurley is going to, you know, I mean, we talked about that last week or the week before, like, the lack of money spent on basketball. Maybe he's decided, like, okay, well, I got to do this myself.
When
I
got to
bring
leads
the money in, and I got to bring the players in with the money that I'm bringing in.
Well, and it's funny, right, because it leads to the whole – the Wilner piece almost felt like, not that it was a planted story, but I wonder if there was some sort of trade, because that's a piece that was designed to embarrass ASU.
Yeah,
but
for
not
sure.
But not the team or the coach. It's designed to embarrass the school.
Put the heat on a little. I mean, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if Hurley, or through back channels, Hurley, you know, fed some info. I mean, that happens all the time in sports media now. The Athletic had pieces written on the Suns and the Lakers seasons and published within like 30 minutes of the end of their seasons this past week, about the, you know, like, well, first of all, they had those, you know, in the barrel ready to fire, but also somebody's leaking that information. Somebody's talking to, you know, and so that's probably the same thing here. It certainly could be a way to put the heat on. And I mean, we, you know, discussed it. Like, I'm surprised Bobby Hurley is still here, for a variety of reasons, but led by the lack of support that the university gives to basketball. And maybe he's just decided, like, well, okay, now I can leverage my name to make some money and bring in some money to the program that I can spend on good players.
Yeah.
Hopefully good players. I mean, that's the big asterisk with this whole thing, is who knows? I mean, you know, getting this kid does not guarantee that he's Anthony Davis or Carl Anthony Towns or, you know, some of these, like, sensational, like, there's, for every one of those, there's 5, you know, top 10 national recruits that it's like, boy, that guy just wasn't that good.
Well, and the thing that, to me, like, look, in college, you can be a 6'9 center.
Sure.
But those guys who you mentioned who are in the class by themselves are comfortable 7-footers.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. You know, this kid's, I mean, the need for 2 years in college also, you know, that's intriguing, but it also is like, wow, okay, this kid is probably pretty raw. He's very young for being a college freshman. You know, from what I've seen, the pictures of him, he's tall and skinny. Like, you know, is he ready to play in the rigorous Big 12, which, you know, it is going to be rigorous. We've mm-hmm. talked about that, and we'll talk about it more over the next few months. But, you know, there's not going to be a lot of let up. And is he ready to play against, you know, 21, 22, 23-year-old, you know, men in a way? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe he's got a special talent, or maybe it's going to be like, wow, this, you know, maybe it's, God, I'm blanking on the kid's name. Who was the big kid that we had? He had like an African name.
Serge Ngunu?
No, not Serge.
Eric Boateng?
Who?
Boateng?
No, not Boateng. Like, I'm thinking it was like a big kid. God, I think he was here for a year and then transferred. This was under Hurley.
Oh, yeah, Jethro.
Jethro Shumpa. Yes. You know, like, he was interested. I think he actually ended up staying 2 years, didn't he?
Yeah.
He barely played his first and then played more in his second year, but still, like, tremendously raw. And granted, he wasn't as highly regarded as this kid, but still kind of a lesson in, like, well, boy, he has a lot of promise, but what does that mean? You know, who knows? I mean, I'm not getting too excited, but it's a moment to feel good about being an ASU basketball fan, which we haven't had many over the, you know, if you want to really stretch it, over 20 years, but certainly over the last, you know, year or so, it's not been great. You know, rough season, a lot of personnel losses, you know, struggles now going into a tougher conference. So this just gives you something to feel like, well, maybe there is a pulse here after all.
Yeah. And this, it also led to some of the, like, you know, momentum creates momentum. You know, you get this guy and it's like, hey, well, let's look back at, you know, Bobby Hurley was actually a pretty good recruiter this whole time. He, you know, he's had a hard time in the NIL world keeping guys.
True.
But he's actually been a pretty good recruiter to get people in the door.
Yeah. I mean, it's a, you know, it's been kind of a roller coaster. You know, you go back two seasons ago and that was almost a brand new team that came together pretty well and, you know, had a good run through the Pac-12 season and made the tournament and, you know, got out of the first four and really, you know, should have won that first round game against TCU, was up most of the game. It was, you know, you felt pretty good about, like, how we went about roster construction, but then so many of those guys leave and you almost have to rebuild completely again. And it did not work as well this past year. It never seemed like a team that had, you know, a smooth feeling to it. You know, they started what, 4-0 in the conference, but that was, you know, it was fool's gold. Like, you know, came back to earth real quick and ended up under 500 in the conference overall. So it's tough when you gotta rebuild every year. You know, it's tough to have year to year momentum, to use the word you just had there. You know, when you're kind of starting all over, and now we're kind of doing it again this year.
Well, the key is we bring Austin Nunez back. So
yeah. I mean, he was part of that team 2 years ago. That's true. Forgot about that. Yeah, I mean, it's that's another thing that we're going to see in college sports now is, I mean, that, you know, an even weirder one was that Alabama offensive tackle who, you know, transferred after Saban left, went to Iowa for spring football, and then transferred back to Alabama. So, you know, if you weren't paying attention, you would think like, well, yeah, he was the starter last year. He's back this year. What happened in between? You know, I guess it's the door's always open, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's the that's one of the interesting things to pivot now to football. The difference between Kenny Dillingham and Deion Sanders about guys leaving, you know, because Dillingham's like, wish him well, great kid, somebody's getting a great program,
or a great
program addition, and it's like, he sucked, he shouldn't be here, he doesn't belong.
Yeah, let's insult your numbers and your stats, and Yeah, I mean, Dillingham has handled that stuff in a very publicly classy way.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the only way to do it. I mean, it's got to be difficult because, you know, if you come out and you say, oh, this guy's a great player, blah, blah, blah. Well, the natural thought is, well, then why, you know, didn't you want to keep him? Or, you know, isn't it frustrating that he's gone? You know, and I mean, it's one thing with like Ryan Clark's kid.
Yeah.
1 year left to play. You got a chance to go to Notre Dame. Like that's probably fairly easy pill to swallow in the world we live in today of transfers and eligibility and all that. Like, okay, I get it. But it's a different thing with Jaden Rashada, who, you know, was pretty highly regarded, was only here for a year, played 3 games. And you know,
led the team in touchdowns despite only playing in 3 games.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, theoretically had potential to be a really good player. Who knows if he would have been or not. You know, when you say, oh, man, you know, this kid's great, and wherever he goes, that, you know, it's like, well, okay, then you're in trouble because you lost him, right? So it's got to be tough for him to juggle that because you got to present confidence about the roster you have while also not acting like, you know, these guys sucked anyway, so who cares? I mean, I don't envy the position that, you know, coaches are in nowadays for many reasons. They make good money, you know, but still, like, it does have to be a juggling act.
Yeah.
You can twist yourself into a pretzel with that. Like, wow, this kid's a great player and a great kid, and we wish him luck. And it's like, well, then aren't those the type of players you want in your program? So, I don't know. But he's handled it well, and you know, look, there's like 17 steps between this being a positive on the field. But boy, the high school recruiting sure does seem to be going well for next year's class.
Yeah.
I mean, they're getting a lot of commitments and I mean, it's a long, long ways from that translating to wins with many speed bumps in between, but it's better than the alternative, I guess, of having it not go well and thinking, man, where are the players going to come from?
Yeah. Well, and he's doing two things, which I think are good. He's recruiting the local kids now today who are in high school, but he's going back and getting the guys who left who are, you know, on their second homes, you know,
right.
I'm thinking about Walden coming back from Oregon, the right. kid coming back from Wisconsin. Like it's it's a smart move. Like, if we're not able to get guys on the way out the door, which, you know, we can't, it seems pretty clear. Like, but if we can get them on their way back in, you know, when they're looking, it's like, hey, you know, we're still here. We apologize for whatever happened that led to us not, you know, the old regime not giving you what you needed, but here we are now.
Agreed. Yeah, I mean, you know, it certainly seems like the Herm group, really the Antonio Pierce group, if you want to talk recruiting, did not, you know, do much to value Arizona, which is kind of a repetitive thing, isn't it? Like, I mean, didn't we have the same conversation about Todd Graham? You know, Todd Graham was obsessed with Texas recruiting.
Yeah.
And Pierce and Herm were obsessed with California recruiting. And, like, that is needed. You know, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Like, you can't just recruit Arizona kids and expect to, you know, compete for conference and national titles. But the talent base here is a lot better than it was 20 years ago when we started college. Dirk was here, and that was a struggle. Like, well, get good Arizona kids. Like, you got to get a lot more than that. You still have to get more than that, but it's a lot better. And so, you know, Dillingham seems to be making that a priority. Both, like you said, transfers back, but also, you know, from the stuff I've read, and admittedly I haven't familiarized myself with a lot of them, but, you know, getting a lot of in-state guys for the 2025 class.
Yeah.
A fair amount of the commitments are big-time guys, highly ranked in Arizona from what I've seen.
Yeah. And they've also, this Polynesian pipeline feels like a real thing now because you've carried it over for 2 classes.
True. Which is an interesting area, you know? I mean, that's, look at Utah. Utah seems to always be good in that. And granted, there's probably the religious connection of the, Mormons and that plays in, but man, Utah always has the Samoans, the Tongans, the et cetera, that, and so it's a rich ground. If you can get in there and, get linemen, I hate to stereotype, but I think it's, there's a lot of good offensive linemen that come from that area.
Yeah.
And man, we need help there.
It's the same thing about annual problem
for ASU. So maybe that is a way to fix that problem.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the same. I don't think it's stereotyping. It's the same thing about saying if you want good offensive linemen, you find the farm kids in Wisconsin and Iowa.
Sure. Exactly. You know? Yeah. I mean, I know there's other, that Vaki kid that played for Utah was a, defensive back, running back. It's not just linemen, but offensive and defensive linemen, they seem to produce them at a high rate from that area of the world.
Yeah,
Hawaii and the Pacific Islands, that definitely feels like an area to farm if you can. And I was texting with you a month or so ago, I think, or maybe it was more recent, but it's even harder, I feel like, to get excited about high school recruiting in the era of immediate transfer eligibility. Because there was always that, you got to sign them and they got to be eligible and they got to be healthy and all that. That always existed. But now you have this whole other piece of they could come here for spring ball and not like it and be gone before their freshman season even starts. Or they could be pretty good their freshman year and then, Georgia and Alabama and Ohio State come calling and see you later. So it's tough, when you feel like you might be like AAA baseball or something like that. I hope that's not how things remain. But again, I'll go back to what I said a few minutes ago. It's better than the alternative.
Yeah.
There have been recent years where it's we have nobody committed, or we have three guys and they're two stars. And it's like, how do you make a roster out of that?
Yeah. Yeah. From showing up with a bare cupboard, this is good. This continues Dillingham building in the right direction.
They're working hard, seems like. I mean, if nothing else, it does not seem like they're just going through the motions, planning their exit strategy, whatever. They are working hard to recruit well. I mean, I saw some list that, right now, we're the number 12 recruiting class in the country for 2025. And the teams, that we're in the mix with are your traditional, Texas A&M. It's that's area we haven't been in for a while, maybe ever. So again, you got to keep the class together and all those things, but it's like, okay. I mean, I respect the hustle and the effort if nothing else.
Yeah. I think it's great. I'll just throw it out there. I think what he's doing is great. I want to briefly pivot to baseball only because you see what Hurley did, you see what Kenny's doing, and then you get to baseball and it's like,
right.
It's going to take more than what they're getting right now. They're not getting enough help from outside financial stuff. And, Bloomquist isn't Hurley in name recognition.
Right.
He's not Hurley in money.
Right. And I saw I saw clips of his media last weekend where he talked about the need for more NIL and all that. I don't disagree. He's right. I also do wonder, we don't pay that close of attention. But does the staff he has, are they developing players well enough? They've missed on some assistant coaches that they wanted. It seems like they've got, a staff that isn't always as invested in recruiting as maybe they should be.
Well, it's a staff that's largely unpaid, too.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You know, and that's just the way it is with baseball, you know. But, I was very happy when they brought him in, and I still like him. I mean, I like him as an ASU guy. But it couldn't be ignored then, and it still can't be ignored, that he had never been a coach at any level. And so you needed good staff, and I'm not sure that they've, whether it's his fault or whether it's the lack of money from the athletic department or a combination of many things, I'm not sure they've done that. Like, I think he made sense as, hey, I'm the face of the program. I'm going to get the program back to feeling the way it used to with Murph and Ez and all that. Murph was a longtime coach. Ez was a long time, you know, like those guys knew how to coach and manage baseball. And Bloomquist was a longtime player, but he hadn't really done this. And so you needed good support. I don't know that that's come to be. I don't think it has.
Yeah.
I mean, the pitching is just, it's bad. And I don't know how that's fixed. That's, you know, beyond my intelligence level, but it's been really bad. You know, they can hit plenty. Like, they, you know, you look at their score, they, from the start of the year, even through this weekend, you know, last night, you know, the night before they score 11 runs. Last night they score 7. Problem is, last night they gave up 14. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's it, you know, like, and it wasn't just an isolated night. Like, that's been the story of their year most of the season is, yeah, they could score 10, but they might give up 12.
Yeah.
So they got plenty of offense, plenty of hitting. But it, man, they're, you know, they're with 4 games left in the conference season, they're 13-13. You know, definition of mediocrity.
Yeah, not good enough.
No, you know, and again, not a great conference. I mean, it's better than maybe what basketball was, but not a loaded conference. It's not like the old days where the Pac-10 would send 7 or 8 teams to the tournament, and to get through the Pac-10 season was really brutal. Like, it's not that way. So I don't know. I don't disagree with his point, but I almost think that might be an oversimplification to say, you know, well, we need more NIL support and that'll, you know, like, will it help? Yeah. But I think there's more to do than that.
Yeah. All right. Should we talk backlash?
Let's do it.
So, you know, I know everything that happened. I'm watching the main event right now.
Okay.
I thought that the Bloodline match with the adding another cousin to it is interesting. It feels like they're trying to make the Bloodline a thing without having to keep Roman, Rock, Jimmy, or Jay really involved.
Correct. Yeah. It's the storyline's evolving. You can see it, you know, like the way Heyman is being presented now is like he doesn't know what's going on. He's terrified of what they're doing. You know, like I think you can see 4 steps down the road that, you know, first of all, the Usos will probably reunite.
Yeah.
And then that Roman will come to their defense as well.
And a Survivor Series?
Something like that. We get the, you know, the original Bloodline group as faces against this new group of heels. And I don't know where Rock falls into that. Like, you know, do we eventually find out that Rock's pulling the strings on this solo group and that makes Rock the heel in the Roman Rock feud? That makes sense, but maybe they go a different direction with that. You know, I don't know. I mean, but the pieces are certainly in place for Roman to come back as a face and reunite with the Usos and get the, you know, crowd support on his side. Heyman, I mean, like, you know, that's the fun thing about wrestling is the group that you hated for 2 years. Like, well, you know what? Now we like them. Bring them back. We want to cheer them. You know, and I think I see that happening over the summer. Probably slowly but surely, and then maybe you do get to a Survivor Series, you know, 4-on-4 or something like that, where you have the Bloodline Civil War type deal.
Yeah. Well, and I like the idea of you get Solo, the two Tongas, one first name, one last name, but both right. Tongas.
Right.
And maybe The Rock. And then on the other side, you've got the Usos and Roman. And then either you find out, I have no idea how old Rikishi is, but is there another son somewhere?
There is another son.
You know,
there's another son that they just signed. Now, I don't know if he's going to end up on Solo's group. Like, do we get another addition? But yeah, Jacob Fatu is a brother of Jimmy and Jay and Solo. So I would assume he factors into this at some point because yeah. They have him under contract now.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. I mean, you know, I definitely think the seeds are planted for, you know, Jimmy apparently has a real life injury that I don't think is long term, but they're giving him some time off. So, you know, the seeds are planted for probably like this group ends up coming after Jay. Jay's all on his own, and here comes Jimmy back to save his twin and turn face again and get them back on the same page. And then eventually, not long after, but a while after, Roman comes back and reunites the group, and they, you know, they realize what they've created with Solo and this group is out of hand, and they got to put an end to it.
So, speaking of main event Jay, what did you think of that match yesterday?
Love the entrance. That was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, we've gone too far in this. We haven't even talked that much, but we've gone too far in this without discussing the amazing crowd.
Oh, yeah. Like, hot all night.
Was so good yesterday and Friday for SmackDown, too. Just awesome.
Yeah. No, that was a crowd that was hot all night. The
yes,
chants,
yes.
You know, in French and English.
I think they've got a formula that they should stick with by taking the first pay-per-view after Mania to somewhere outside the U.S., somewhere that's like starving, because there is a little, I mean, I haven't watched every show, but I've kind of, you know, there's a hangover after WrestleMania. It's a little bit like, you know, like it has the feel of like if you played the Super Bowl and then the next Sunday there were regular season games, and it's like, man, I'm kind of having a hard time getting up for these. We just got to the big payoff, and, you know, you want me to watch Raw and SmackDown again. Like, And the last few weeks, it felt like a hangover, and that show, like, kickstarted it again. Like, okay, these people are really into it. I guess I have to be as well, right?
Yeah. I mean,
Puerto Rico was that way last year for Backlash. Same thing. So, like, that's the formula I think they should stick with.
Yeah. The crowd was great. I thought that the women's triple threat was good.
Yeah.
Did it feel like a rushed end to you?
A little bit.
It was a roll up counter done, you know?
I wasn't surprised one that Bayley won.
No.
Because she just won the title. Like that was the problem with the card, and that's why a hot crowd helped, is like all the matches were very predictable. You pretty much knew new champs were not going to lose.
Yeah, the only one that seemed questionable was Priest, and only because
yes.
It was like, how much faith do they have in him to carry the title?
Exactly, yeah. But, you know, like, Bayley losing was not going to happen. Cody losing was not going to happen. So you have to make the match interesting, and I feel like the way they booked it was, one, you know, now you can have the one-on-one feud with her and Tiffany Stratton.
Yeah.
Because she didn't lose. She had, you know, she came off well. But also you keep Naomi kind of looking like a strong second-tier babyface because, you know, she lost on a roll-up and she was, you know, magnanimous in defeat. She didn't, you know, like, so you kind of can take her out of the story without making her look bad and just do the one-on-one rivalry if you want to, you know. So it was a little rushed, but I think it was, I mean, I don't think it was like they had to rush it, like somebody got hurt or something. It just felt like that's a way to book it where everybody looked good coming out of it, basically.
And I thought that match was a really good match. I thought Tiffany Stratton looked fantastic again.
I mean, she's a star on the rise,
yeah.
Feels like. She gets great crowd reactions. She, you know, gives off a great heel vibe. Feels like she'll be one that, like, a year or so from now, she'll take that heel character and it'll just become a face naturally because the fans like her. Like, she's a heel now, but it'll be like Seth Rollins 2-3 years ago, where it was like, you just evolved the character a slight bit, and they're a face. Because the fans are just going to cheer for her anyway.
Yeah. On the flip side, I thought the women's tag match was sloppy. And I'm not a guy who, like, notices sloppy that much.
Me neither, but there was,
a double clothesline where Jade Cargill, like, just straight up clocked Kairi Sane in the face instead of, like, letting her duck under.
No,
it was a lot of Jade Cargill sloppy.
After Mania, like, she's a little rough around the edges, and it still feels that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that there was a lot of stuff in that match that felt like she was sloppy. Not that everyone was sloppy, that she was sloppy, and it made the match, like, it was one of those things where it felt, she looks kind of Goldberg-y, in that, like, boy, she might actually hurt somebody, like, and not kayfabe hurt somebody, not, like, strong style hurt somebody, like, like, doesn't know what she's doing 100% and, like, hurt somebody.
Well, you got to go back to, like, there was a lot of fanfare when they signed her, and that was, I want to say, maybe, like, September, October, and then they just, like, they made, like, kind of a big deal of it even on TV, and then she just kind of disappeared. And, I mean, Triple H even did one of his post-pay-per-view press conferences. It was not Royal Rumble. It was before that. And kind of alluded to, while being, you know, polite, you know, and not saying it, you know, but kind of alluded to, like, you know, well, you know, she's still working and, you know, we're, you know, you don't have to rush. And it's almost like they got her in and realized, like, she's not ready for this. But then she got such a big reaction at Royal Rumble that it's like they've pivoted now. And like, well, we got to get her on TV. We got to, you know, and maybe she's still not quite ready.
Now they put the belts on her.
See,
you know,
how that goes. And now you put a belt on her, so you can't take her off TV.
Yeah.
You know, by booking that match, and I was pretty sure they were going to win. They weren't going to have her lose.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, okay, now you put titles on. I mean, granted, they don't do a lot with the women's tag titles, but still, like, they're on. And so, you know, now they're eligible for both shows, according to the rules. Like, so that means she's going to be on even more. And, like, yeah, I agree. It was not the smoothest match yesterday. And neither was her part at WrestleMania. And, like, you know, she's got a lot of character. Like, the fans are reacting to her aura and her gimmick, and all that.
She looks legit. Like, she looks like a star.
She absolutely does. And they're presenting her like one and all that. But yeah, if the ring work doesn't back it up, people turn quick. And I do, you know, yeah, it does have a Goldberg feel to it in a way of like, oh, she only gets in matches for a short amount of time usually. When she's in, she doesn't sell a lot, you know, like it's, you know, she dominates, she went, you know, so yeah, I agree. It was, I mean, there was only 5 matches on the card. I thought that was the weakest.
Comfortably.
And that's comfortably. I mean, and that is also a testament to the others were really good.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the other 4, Priest J was good. I mean, the story kind of played more into it as far as, like, you know, the Judgment Day interfering, and Priest didn't want him to interfere. And, you know, like, you could see we're building toward something there, too, where either Priest turns face or Balor turns face, and, you know, the rivalry is coming there. I thought Jay came off better than he did in the match against Jimmy.
Yeah.
I mean, it was much better than that match. That Mania match just didn't work for whatever reason.
Yeah. The outcome wasn't really in doubt, but, you know, this Cody Styles match is
really good.
A good match. This is,
it was really good. Yeah, this you is knew Cody was going to win, but yes, it was a really good match. It was a wrestling match. I mean, like, that sounds stupid, but, like, it was just two guys who've been doing it for a long time that know how to pull off a big time match. Just let them do it for 25 minutes or so.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of what I, you know, this was the kind of match that people were like, you know, as soon as Daniel Bryan left, it's like, well, who puts on this match where it's just a good wrestling match?
Yeah.
You know? And they have guys who can, obviously, KO, Sammy, Randy.
Sure.
But
Rollins.
But this was, you know, this wasn't, other than the Cody intro, this wasn't about anything other than, we don't like each other, you have the title, and it just, the match flowed well, they sold for each other, you know.
Yeah, definitely. No. I mean, I wonder if they'll, you know, if they'll keep the story going. I mean, Cody won convincingly, and he's not going to drop the title to Styles. But you could keep it going by just, you know, Styles ramps up the heel act. You know, he comes out on Friday, and, you know, instead of doing the whole, like, hey, I respect your dad, and I'm going to take, you know, like, kind of how they built this one, it turns into more of a heelish thing. You have them fight again at the Saudi show in 3 weeks. You don't have much time to build up a new rivalry anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, having a rematch, like, I mean, you're sort of killing time with Cody right now. Like, Cody's not going to lose the title in 2 months.
Well, and this is why having an AJ Styles type on the roster, you know, it's, I don't want this to sound insulting because I think he could do it for the title, but it's what The Miz is to the mid-card.
Yeah.
In terms of, it's a guy who, look, he's a credible threat to take the title.
Totally,
if he was the champion for, you know, two pay-per-views, I'd buy it, you know. I believe he was, but...
No, I agree. I mean, it's a good opponent. It's like having a, you know, a 15-year vet that comes off the bench for an NBA team. Like, you know, he maybe used to be an all-star. Maybe he's not an all-star anymore, but he could still give you good minutes. He could still, you know, play in the playoffs. And you don't feel like, well, what's this guy doing? Like, yes, Styles was a good choice for the first challenger, because also you don't really lose much by having him lose.
Oh, right. That's like kind of what I mean. And that's your 15-year vet thing. Like, his career is made. Like,
yes,
he was an indie darling. He was a WWE champion. And it doesn't matter. Like, look, he's on his way out. And he's, you know, the next guy in this line is Randy Orton, except people love him too much right now.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, the temptation, I thought it at first was like, okay, Gunther drops the Intercontinental title. Does he go after Cody? But, like, you're not going to take the title off Cody that fast. So you don't want to like, okay, his first run at a main event, he loses two or three pay-per-view matches. That's not good. You know, that kind of hurts the character. So you save that for maybe that's SummerSlam. Maybe it's Survivor Series.
Well, they've got that German.
Get to that down the road.
They've got that German one where maybe he's going to win against somebody.
Exactly. I think that's end of August or something. Yeah. Now, I guess he's on Raw now, and Cody's, you know, so who knows? You could always, you know,
but
you
could
have him go after
the
title or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I kind of thought that at first. I'm like, no, you don't want to do it with an up-and-comer, because then you kind of hurt their momentum a little bit if they, you know, and again, Cody's not going to lose the title in a short time. I don't know if he's going to have it for a year. He might, though. Wouldn't surprise me if he still has it next year at WrestleMania. Like, that's, you know... Kind of the way they've booked this title is, you know, you're going to have long reigns. All the titles, honestly. I mean, like, you know, that's been a hallmark of the company lately is we're not having the title change hands every 4 weeks. If you win it, you know, you're going to have it for a while in one fashion or another. And certainly the top title, you know, you're not going to, I mean, SummerSlam at the earliest is when he's going to lose that title. And probably not even then.
Yeah. Although,
so,
I did hear...
Yeah, Styles is the perfect foil for the moment.
I did hear Cody give an interview where he talked about his last run.
Mm-hmm.
Where he lost to R-Truth like 30 or 40 times.
Really?
At like house
really?
Shows and things.
Yeah.
And so, he said that he this was, you know, sort of an out of kayfabe answer. He basically was like, you know, I don't need the pen. I don't need to be the booker. But I can tell you this, if I'm ever fighting R-Truth, he's looking up at the lights.
Yeah, that's
That's probably accurate. Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, but I mean, you know, like they'll get a juicier story for him. I don't buy that. Like, oh, they're just killing time until you know The Rock comes back at next year's Mania. Like,
oh no, I think you're gonna see them heat up. Better. I think they're gonna heat up Randy for him if Gunther goes the other way, because look, he came out and did the celebrating with him.
Right.
They are friends. They were both in Evolution. Like, they have all these things, but like. But Randy needs another title shot, and there's only like you don't wait in line when you've won it, you know, 14 times.
True. And that's one of those where you could do it in the hey, we're old pals, we're being respectful towards each other, and then Cody wins the first match, and then maybe Randy does the heel turn after that.
Well, and you could see, you know, kind of like what he did with KO when they had the triple threat. We're all pals, and then like, I might have done it if you didn't stop me. I might have actually done it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You know. So yeah. I mean, I don't know. The Randy Orton face run is going so well right now, but at the same time, he is a great heel, and it would be you're right. It's a story that's got legs. Of the history they have together. Their dads were both wrestlers. They came into business young, but Randy had the immediate success. He was pushed to the top super fast. Cody had to leave, you know, like there's tons of layers to that story.
I mean, the other thing is I don't know enough of Cody's history, and you obviously couldn't do it with Dustin, but Cody seems like he's been squeaky clean. You know, what's the phrase? White meat baby face his whole career.
True.
Randy, not.
Has not. Yeah. Yeah.
And you could have Cody lean into that if you wanted. You could. You know, I had to scrap and claw. You were given everything. You know, how many chances? You never had to leave the company. You never got told, hey, you're going to have to fight these bottom of the card house shows to make your market. It's like, no, you came out of Ohio and they said, you're the next guy.
They put you in Triple H and Flair stable right away and give you a world title at like 25 or something. Yeah.
And then they have you work against every legend who comes back and beat them so that you just are known. Right.
There is certainly a lot of meat on that bone if they go that way. And I mean, Orton turning heel makes the most sense. And yet, as I'm saying it, and I'm stealing this, I saw The Undertaker said this in a podcast recently, like, maybe Cody turns heel at some point in the future.
Yeah.
Like, that Cody character is very popular, but you could see it being a heel. You could see he could ratchet up the smarminess. He could ratchet up the arrogance.
It's the same suit. It's the same suit.
Yeah. You know, like, all of a sudden he could be the... I shouldn't say all of a sudden. Like, slowly but surely, you just have him become a little bit more arrogant and a little bit more entitled. Like, you know, it's my company now. I run this show. You know, I had to leave and make something of myself because this company didn't like me. You know, the same character could easily give off heel vibes if they wanted it to.
But, I don't know. Selfishly, I want one more Randy run, you know?
I could see that, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
because how much time do you have left? He's in his 40s. He had a major back injury.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Probably doesn't have a lot of runway left, you wouldn't think. I mean, he's 44. I looked it up yesterday when I was watching. Like, he's not that much older than Cody. It's weird, because, like, I don't think we think of Cody as, like, oh, he's near the end. I mean, this is his, like, first big run at the top of the card. Whereas Orton's been around for so long, and like, well, he's got to be near the end, right? It feels like he probably is, but who knows? Maybe he does it another 8-10 years.
Maybe, but he just, between that back surgery...
I agree.
And just the
mentality kind of feels different from him now. Feels more like he's savoring the moments. All that. Like, it's a different feel than it used to be.
He's run out of having to prove things.
Sure.
I mean, like, not that he's not motivated or whatever, but this is Cody's first title run. Randy's had double-digit title runs.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly, yeah.
Randy's been at the top of the card for 2 decades.
for most of 20 years. That's why it's like, it's funny that, like, I think Cody's almost 40. They're not that far apart in age. And yet it does feel like they're far apart in age, because it feels like, well, Orton's the old head, the mentor, the locker room leader. Cody's the up and comer. He just got his first world title, right? Like, well, I mean, sort of. He's sort of an up and comer, but he's not like Randy was when he was an up and comer.
Well, and it's also like, you look at their contemporaries and it's like, Adam Edge Copeland is on his last contract. And right, he has said right. that. Like, he's publicly said, this is it.
Right.
But, you know, which is interesting. I guess when you're already a WWE Hall of Famer, you don't have to go back and sign that contract to get the...
No, you're right. I mean, Angle's done. He was there when Orton was brand new. Jericho, probably nearing the end. Probably should be.
Well, and that's another guy of, like, if Orton has a Jericho length of career, we're still at 7 years or less.
True. That's a good point. Yeah.
And if Cody's going to hold it for a year, I mean, I will throw out there, Randy is the kind of person where if you wanted it to go back and forth and you wanted to have a brief, like, let's trade the title, you know, a couple times, he could be that guy.
You could. I mean, it is a tricky situation. They certainly got into it with Roman the past year. And I feel like you kind of got to be careful of the feeling of, like, okay, our top champ is only potentially going to lose at WrestleMania. Because Roman's matches, which he didn't have many, between Mania 39 and Mania 40, was like, well, we know what's going to happen. We know who's going to win. They're not, you know, so, like, in a way, I mean, I think Cody holding the title for a year makes sense. But in another way, it's like, well, maybe he should lose the title at SummerSlam and then get it back.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying is, like,
you know, like you're saying, yeah, I mean, like, because you don't want to get to a point of, like, okay, well, the champion won at WrestleMania, I'll just tune back in next January and see what's happening. Well, like, you got to keep people invested.
I'm also going to throw this out there, and I think that there's someone, and by someone, I think I mean Priest right now, needs to drop a title on free TV.
I agree.
Like,
I mean, I agree. You want to have that every now and again. Can't be too often, but every now and again, you need a big title change on Raw or SmackDown where it's like, whoa, you missed Raw or SmackDown? Well, guess what you missed? You missed a title change.
Yeah.
I totally agree. They too far... too often, God, I'm stammering over my words, too often fall into the trap of like, well, the title only changes hands on pay-per-views. And like, well, you know, you need that. Like, I remember when I was, I don't know, 14 or 15, Triple H lost the title to Jericho on a Raw. They ended up, like, rescinding it, right? You know, he used his power to, you know, but it was like one of those moments of like, whoa, Jericho just beat Triple H for the title. Oh my God, I'm lucky I'm watching. This is a big moment.
Well, it's the Mick Foley winning his first title happened on a SmackDown.
Taped on, because the WCW guys ripped it before it was ever aired. Right, yeah.
But it's one of those things, you know, you can go way back or you can go, AEW did it. They had this guy, Action Andrade, who was, you thought he was just a jobber, and he beat Jericho in his first match. You have the 1-2-3 kid over Razor Ramon and just
over Scott. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, you gotta, you know, you don't want to do it too often because it cheapens your titles if you're constantly, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, every now and again, you gotta have it happen on the TV show. And I mean, it'd be interesting. It's a ways off, but it'd be interesting if they did it on a Raw, like late in the year when they're in the transition phase to Netflix. But would you do that then? You know, like, well, you better stick with us. You better stick with us on Netflix because you never know what might happen on Raw.
Yeah, because if you miss it.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I admit, like, I don't have Netflix right now. Used to, but I don't have it. And I'm in that mode right now of like, well, I don't know. Is it worth paying for that? or can I just watch the replay on Peacock? I don't know. But if you start giving me some big things happening on Raw in, you know, the fall, like, you might lure me in. Like, I gotta do it, because after football season, yeah, I want to watch this on Monday nights.
Yeah. I get that.
So, and I'm sure I'm not the only one with that mentality of like, I don't know, I could just watch the replay on Peacock a couple days later, right?
Yeah. That's a good point. I mean, it's, you, if you want to make it must appointment television, must see yeah. TV.
You do some surprise returns, you do a title change, you do, you yeah. know, something like that where it's like, oh man, I missed this live. Ah, can't duplicate the feel of that.
Yeah. It's not the same finding out on my Twitter feed.
It's not. No. So, yeah, but overall, I think a pretty darn good show. The crowd helped a ton. And it just, to me, it felt like it kind of, you know, reestablished a little bit of momentum. Again, you have that post-WrestleMania hangover. It's natural. There's no way around it. You build, and, you know, then it's 2 days later, or 1 day later, you're on Raw, and it's like, well, okay, am I as interested now? But this was good, and now they got a run of, you know, frequent shows. I think every 3 weeks they have a PLE, as they call them.
Yeah.
Saudi Arabia, Scotland, and then Money in the Bank in Canada.
Yeah, it's pretty good time to be a fan.
Yeah. I mean, it should be some good crowds. The Scotland crowd will be super hot. You know that. You know, Canada's always good for pro wrestling. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of the Saudi shows for many reasons. But I will say, like, the last one they did last year, the crowd was much better. Like, they are getting better. It's gone from being like it was taking place in a warehouse to like, okay, there's a little bit of atmosphere here.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about sports. Until next time, he's Matt. I'm Ben. It's the Ben and Matt Sportscast.